All right, here we go. Hey, welcome to RealLibertyMedia.com. It's a brand new series tonight, titling it Reading Radio Series. And I thought it only obvious to follow, since I'm doing what I call the Radio Writing Series, is a ponder gander of what matters right here at RLM Radio. And we're not friends to Facebook, I don't guess, anymore. We're deemed as, what'd they call that? Community standards. Not meeting up to par. Well, regardless, I'm a bit dumbfounded still about the whole deal. And where'd this come from all of a sudden? All the time. All right, well, let's go to this story. It's a short one. It's by Mark Twain. It's called Wit, Inspirations of the Two-Year-Olds. Now let's see if I can do it straight through without stumbling. All right, here we go. Oh, I'll introduce myself. Hi, I'm Vince, and I'm a reader-holic. Okay, let's try it. And this comes from, by the way, it comes from AmericanLiterature.com, author Mark Twain, short stories, Wit, Inspirations of the Two-Year-Olds. Let's do it. All infants appear to have an impertinent and disagreeable fashion nowadays of saying smart things on most occasions that offer, and especially on occasions when they ought not to be saying anything at all. Judging by the average published specimens of smart sayings, the rising generation of children are little better than idiots, and the parents must surely be little better than the children, for in most cases, they are the publishers of the sunburst of infantile imbecility, which dazzle us from the pages of our periodicals. I may seem to speak with some heat, not to say a suspicion of personal spite, and I do admire that it nettles me to hear about so many gifted infants these days, and remember that I seldom said anything smart when I was a child. I tried it once or twice, but it was not popular. The family were not expecting brilliant remarks from me, and so they snubbed me sometimes and spanked me the rest. But it makes my flesh creep and my blood run cold to think what might have happened to me if I had dared to utter some of the smart things of this generation's four-year-olds. Were my father could hear me, to have simply skinned me alive and considered his duty at the end would have seemed to him criminal leniency towards one so sinning. He was a stern, unsmiling man and hated all forms of precocity. If I had said some of the things I've referred to and said them in his hearing, he would have destroyed me. He would indeed. He would, provided the opportunity remained with him. But it would not. For I would have had judgment enough to take some strychnine first and say my smart things afterwards. The fair record of my life has been tarnished by just one pun. My father overheard that, and he hunted me over four or five townships seeking to take my life. If I'd been full grown, of course he would have been right, but child as I was, I could not know how wicked a thing I had done. I made one of those remarks, ordinarily called smart things, before that, but it was not a pun. Still, it came near to causing a serious rupture between my father and myself, my father and mother, my Uncle Ephraim and his wife, and one or two others were present. And the conversation turned on a name for me. I was lying there trying to some of this India rubber rings of various patterns and endeavoring to make a selection, for I was tired of trying to cut my teeth on people's fingers and wanted to get hold of something that would enable me to hurry the thing through and get something else. Did you ever notice what a nuisance it was cutting your teeth on a nurse's finger, or how breaking and tiresome it was trying to cut them on your big toe? And did you never get out of patience and wish your teeth were in Jericho long before you got them half cut? And to me, it seems as if these things happened yesterday. And they did to some children, but I digress. I was lying there trying the India rubber rings, and I remember looking at the clock and noticing that it was an hour and 25 minutes. I'd be 2 weeks old, and thinking how little I had done to merit the blessings that were so unsparingly lavished upon me, my father said. Abraham is a good name. My grandfather was Abraham. My mother says, Abraham's a good name. Very well. Let us have Abraham too, one of his names. I said, Abraham suits the subscriber. My father frowned. My mother looked pleased. My aunt said, what a little darling it is. My father said, Isaac is a good name and Jacob's a good name. My mother assented and said, no names are better. Let us add Isaac and Jacob to his names. I said, all right, Isaac and Jacob are good enough for yours truly. Pass me that rattle, please. I can't chew any rubber rings all day. Not a soul made a memorandum of these sayings of mine for publication. I saw that and did it myself, else they would have been utterly lost. So far from meeting with a generous encouragement like other children when developing intellectually, I was now fiercely scowled upon by my father. My mother looked grieved and anxious, and even my aunt had about her an expression of seeming to think that maybe I had gone too far. I took a vicious bite out of my India rubber ring, and I covertly broke the rattle over the kitty's head, but said nothing. Presently, my father said, Samuel is a very excellent name. I saw that trouble was coming. Nothing could prevent it. I laid down my rattle. Over the side of the cradle, I dropped my uncle's silver watch, the clothes brush, the toy dog, my tin soldier, the nutmeg grater, and other matters, which I was accustomed to examine and meditate upon and make pleasant noises with, and bang and batter and break when I needed some wholesome entertainment. And I put on my little frock and my little bonnet, and I took my pygmy shoes in one hand and my licorice in the other, and climbed out onto the floor. And I said to myself, now, if the worst comes to worst, I am ready. Then I said aloud in a firm voice, Father, I cannot wear the name of Samuel. My son, Father, I mean it, I cannot. Why? Father, I have an invincible antipathy to that name. My son, that is unreasonable. My many great and good men have had been named Samuel. Sir, I have yet to hear of the first instance. What? Well, there was Samuel the prophet. Was he not great and good? Not so very, my son. With his own voice the Lord called him. Yes, sir. And had to call him a couple of times before he could come. Ooh, and then I sailed forth, and that stern old man sallied forth after me. He overtook me at noon the following day, and when the interview was over, I had acquired the name of Samuel, and a thrashing, and other useful information. And by means of this compromise, my father's wrath was appeased, and a misunderstanding bridged over, which might have become a permanent rupture if I had chosen to be unreasonable. But just judging by this episode, what would my father have done to me if ever I had uttered in his hearing one of the flat, sickly things these two-year-olds say in print nowadays? In my opinion, there would have been a case of infanticide in our family. That was a Mark Twain story. It what wit inspirations of the two-year-olds at AmericanLiterature.com. Author Mark Twain short stories, wit inspirations of the two-year-olds. Thanks. All right, I think is what I'll do. That was so short, wasn't it? I'm debating on splitting them up, and but I would like to read another. But I'll have to go fetch one, and I'll play a little song and go hit a pause in the recording for right now. Alrighty. Okay, come back here from a little break. In looking, I thought, well, that was so short, I'd find something else. And I didn't pre-read this one, so I'll see how I stumble through it or not. It is The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County by Mark Twain. Twain's story was first published in the Saturday Press on November the 18th, 1865. It was republished in The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County and Other Sketches in 1867 by Harper and Brothers. In compliance with the request of a friend of mine who wrote me from the East, I called on a good-natured, garrulous old Simon Wheeler and inquired after my friend's friend, Leonidas W. Smiley, as requested to do. And I hereunto append the results. I have a lurking suspicion that Leonidas W. Smiley is a myth and that my friend never knew such a person. And that he only conjectured that if I asked old Wheeler about him, he would remind him of the infamous Jim Smiley, and he'd go to work and bore me to death with some exasperating reminiscence of him, as long and as tedious as it should be, useless to me. If that was designed, it succeeded. I found Simon Wheeler dozing comfortably by the barroom stove on the dilapidated tavern in the decaying mine town camp of Angels. And I noticed that he was fat, bald-headed, and had an expression of winning gentleness and sympathy upon his tranquil countenance. He roused up and gave me a good day. I told him a friend had commissioned me to make some inquiries about the cherished companion of his boyhood named Leonidas W. Smiley, Reverend. Leonidas W. Smiley, a young minister of the gospel who, he had heard, was at one time a resident of Angel's Camp. I added that if Mr. Wheeler could tell me anything about this Reverend Leonidas W. Smiley, I would feel under many obligations to him. Simon Wheeler backed me into a corner and blockaded me there with his chair, and then sat down and reeled off the monotonous narrative which follows this paragraph. He never smiled. He never frowned. He never changed his voice from the gentle flowing key to which he tuned his initial sentence. He never betrayed the slightest suspicion of enthusiasm. But all through the indeterminable narrative there ran a vein of impressive earnestness and sincerity, which showed me plainly that, so far from his imagining that there was anything ridiculous or funny about his story, he regarded it as a really important matter, and admired its two heroes as men of transcendent genius and finesse. I should have read this first. I digress. I let him go on in his way and never interrupted him once. Reverend Leonidas W. ATM. Reverend Leewell, there was a fellow here once by the name of Jim Smiley in the winter of 49. Or it may have been in the spring of 50. I don't recollect exactly somehow, though. What makes me think it was one or the other is because I remember the big flume wasn't finished when he first came to the camp. But anyways, he was the curious man about always betting on anything that turned up you ever see. If he could get anybody to bet on the other side, and he changed sides, well, anyway, that suited the other man, would suit him, and anyway, just so he got a bet, he was satisfied. But still, he was lucky. Uncommon lucky. He most always came out a winner. He was always ready and laying for a chance. There couldn't be no solidity thing mentioned that feller offered to bet on and take any sides he pleased. That's what I was just telling you. If there was a horse race, you'd find them flush, or you'd find them busted at the end, one or the other. If there was a dog fight, he'd bet on it. If there was a cat fight, he'd bet on it. If there was a chicken fight, he'd bet on it. Why? If there were two birds sitting on a fence, he would bet you which one would fly first. Or, if there was a camp meeting, he'd be there regular to bet on Parson Walker, which he judged to be the best exhorter about. Here he was, and a good man. If he'd ever seen a straddled bug start to go anywhere, he would bet you how long it would take him to get wherever he was going. And if you look him up, he would follow that straddle bug to Mexico. But what he would find out, where he was bound, and how long it took him on the road. Lots of the boys here had seen that Smiley and can tell you about him. Why, it never made no difference to him. He'd bet on anything. The dangest feller, Parson Walker's wife, laid very sick once for a good while, and it seemed as if they weren't going to save her. But one morning he come in and Smiley up and asked him how she was. And he said, she was considerable better. Thank the Lord for his infinite mercy. And coming on so smart that with the blessings of Providence, she'd get well yet. And Smiley, before he thought, says, well, I'll rest 2.5. She won't do any better. She don't anyway. He says, this year Smiley had a mare, and the boys called the 15-minute nag, but that was only in fun. You know, because of course she was faster than that, and he used to win money on that horse. Oh, she was so slow and always had the asthma, or the distemper, or consumption, or something of that kind. I used to give her 200 or 300 yard start, and then pass her on her way. But always, at the bag end of the race, she'd get excited and desperate-like and come a-cavorting and straddling up and scattered her legs around timber and limber and sometimes in the air and sometimes out to one side amongst the fences and kicking up all more dust and raising more racket and her coughing and sneezing and blowing her nose, which always fetch up the strand just about a neck ahead. There she'd go and as near as you could cipher it down. And he had a little small bull pup that took the look at him. You'd think he wasn't worth a cent, but to sit around and look ornery and lay for a chance to steal something. But as soon as money was up on him, he was a different dog. His under jaw began to stick out like the forecastle of a steamboat, and his teeth undercover shine like the furnaces. And a dog might tackle him and bull rag him and bite him and throw him head over shoulder 2 or 3 times. And Andrew Jackson, which was the name of the pup, Andrew Jackson would never let on but what he was satisfied and hadn't expected nothing else. And the bets began doubled on the other side all the time till the money was all up, and then all of a sudden he'd grab that other dog just by the jinky of his hind leg and freeze to it. Not y'all, you understand, but only just grip and hang on till they throwed up the sponge. If it was a year. Smiling, he always come out a winner on that pup. Till he harnessed a dog once that didn't have no hind legs because they hadn't been sawed off in a circular saw. Oh, well, they had been, that is. They'd been sawed off, well, of all things. And when the thing had gone on along far enough and the money was all up, he'd come in to match a snatch for his pet Hope, and he'd see in a minute how he'd been imposed on and how the other dog had him in the door, so to speak, and he appeared surprised And then he looked sort of discouraged like and didn't try no more to win the fight. And so he got shuckled out bad, and he gave Smiley a look, and as much as to say his heart was broke and it was all his fault for putting up a dog that hadn't had no hind legs for him to take hold of, which was his main dependence in a fight. And then he limped off a piece and laid down and died. He was a good pup, was that Andrew Jackson, and would have made a name for himself if he had lived, for the stuff was in him, and he had genius. I know it because he hadn't no opportunities to speak of. And if don't stand to reason that dog could make such a fight as he could under them circumstances if he had no talent. Always makes me feel sorry when I think of the last fight of his and the way it turned out. Well, this year Smiley had rat terriers and chicken cocks and tomcats and all them kinds of things till you couldn't rest and you couldn't fetch nothing for him to bet on, but he'd match you. He catched a frog one day and took him home and said he calculated to educate him. And so he'd never done nothing for 3 months, but sat in his backyard and learnt that frog to jump. And you bet he did learn him. Yeah, he give him a little punch behind, and the next minute you'd see that frog whirling in the air like a donut. See him turn him over a somersault, or maybe a couple. He got a good start, and he come down flat-footed and all right like a cat. He got up and so the matter of catching flies and kept them in practice so constant that he'd nail a fly every time as far as he could see him. Smiley said all a frog wanted was education, and he could do most anything. I believe him. Why, I even seen him sit Daniel Webster down here on this floor. Daniel Webster was the name of the frog. And sing out, "Flies, flies, Daniel flies," and quicker than you could wink, he'd spring straight up and snake a fly. Off in the counter right there. And flop down on the floor again as solid as a gob of mud. And fall to scratching the side of his head with one hind foot and indifferent as if he had no idea he'd been doing anything more than any frog might do. You never see a frog so modest and straightforward as he was. All he had was so gifted, and when it come to fire and square, a jumping on a dead level, he could get over more ground one straddle than any animal of his breed you ever see. Jumping on a dead level was his strong suit, you understand. When it come to that, Smiley would ante up his money on as long as he had a red. Smiley was monstrous, proud of his frog. Well, he might be for fellas that had traveled and been everywhere and said he laid over any frog that they'd ever seen. Well, Smiley kept the beast in a little lattice box, and he used to fetch him down sometimes or lay for a bet. One day a fella, a stranger in camp he was, he come across him with his box and says, "What might be that you got in the box?" And Smiley says, sort of indifferent like, "It might be a parrot. Or it might be a canary, maybe, but it ain't. It's only a frog." And the fella, he took it and he looked at it careful and turned it around this way and that and says, "So 'tis. Well, what's he good for?" Well, Smiley says, easy and careless, "He's good enough for one thing, I should judge. He can outjump any frog in Calaveras County." The fella took the box again, and he took another long, particular look, and he gave it back to Smiley, and he says, very deliberate, "Well," he says, "I don't see no pimps of that frog that's any better than any other frog. Ain't no points at all in it." "Maybe you don't," Smiley says. "Maybe you understand frogs, and maybe you don't understand them. Maybe you've had experience, and maybe you ain't. Only an amateur, as it were." Anyways, I got my opinion, and I'll risk $40 he can outjump any frog in Calaveras County. And the feller studied a minute, and he says, kind of sad-like, he says, well, I'm only a stranger here, and I ain't got no frog. But if I had a frog, I'd bet you. And then Smiley says, that's all right, that's all right. If you hold my box a minute, I'll go get you a frog. So the feller took the box, and he put his $40 along with Smiley's, and he sat down to wait. Well, so he sat there a good while thinking and thinking to himself that he'd got the frog out and prized his mouth open and took a teaspoon and filled him with a quail shot filled. And he filled him full of quail shot. Okay, yes, I remember the shot. Quail shot, bird shot. Filled him pretty near up to his chin and set him on the floor. Smiley, he went to the swamp and he slopped around in the mud for a long time. And finally, he catched the frog and fetched him in and gave him to this feller and says, now, if you're ready, set him alongside of Dan'l with his four paws just even with Dan'l's and I'll give the word. He says, one, two, three, get! And him and the feller touched their frogs from behind, and the new frog hopped off lively. But old Dan'l, he gave a heave and hoisted up his shoulders like a Frenchman. But it was no use. He couldn't budge. He was planted as solid as a church, and he couldn't no more stir than if he had anchored out. Smiley was a good deal surprised, and he was disgusted, too. But he didn't have no idea what the matter was, of course. The feller took the money and started away, and when he was going out the door, he sort of jerked his thumb over his shoulder, so Dan'l and says again, very deliberate. Well, he says, I don't see no points about that frog that's any better than any other frog. Smiley stood scratching his head and looking down at Dan'l a long time, and at last says, I do wonder what in the nation that frog thawed off for. I wonder if there ain't something the matter with him. He pears to look mighty baggy somehow. He catched Dan up by the nape of the neck and he hefted him up and he says, well, I blame my cats if he don't weigh 5 pounds. And turned him upside down and he belched out a double handful of shot. Then he had what? And he was the maddest man. He set the frog down and it took out after the feller, but he never catched him. Yeah, I hear Simon Wheeler heard his name called from the front yard, and he got up to see what was wanted. And turning to me, as he moved away, he says, just sit where you are, stranger, and rest easy. I ain't gonna be gone but a second. But by your leave, I did not think the continuation of the story of the enterprising vagabond Jim Smiley would be likely to afford me much information concerning the Reverend Leonidas W. Smiley, and so I started away. At the next door, I met the sociable Wheeler returning, and he buttonholed me and recommended, well, there she is, Smiley, had a yaller. One-eyed cow, it didn't have no tail, only just a short stump like a banana. And however, lacking both time and inclination, I did not wait to hear about the afflicted cow that took my leave. And that is the story of the celebrated jumping frog of Calaveras County, as featured as the short story of the day on Saturday, April 21st. 2018, as I share this from AmericanLiterature.com, author Mark Twain, short story, The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. All right. Well, I think that'll do. Not quite an hour, and didn't take the time out and pause in between. I don't know what it is yet, but this is the first run of a radio reading series of right here at Real Liberty Media, RLM Radio, if you're trying to share to Facebook. yes, they've dog-eyed us and stopped us from putting Real Liberty Media over. Anyways, look for RLM Radio to be the, I guess, the suggested post for Facebook in the coming days. And we'll be back. Well, I'm going to do this next Saturday, I reckon. I'll be back in between with Chapter 3 of An Ozark Heritage. And that's a history of right here, hereabouts where I live at, Arkansas, in the Ozarks, Half Moon Mountain, and the families that come to settle this part of the world. And then Friday I'll be back with a Ponder Gander. I forgot to write it down, but I think I had a muse for the number 3 in the series of the new series here, the new season of What Matters of Ponder Gander. Friday, noon central. And perhaps I'll get this new feller that's been around in the chat for a little while, and he's got quite these ideas, and we've talked a couple of times on radio, and see if he and I might put together a little short run series of contrast in the occupation, you might perhaps call it. Anyways, hey, come around, check us out, reallibertymedia.com. Thanks for listening. I've been your host, your reader, Vincent Easley II. Thank you very much.